This is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another edition of the podcast here on the D Word. This time around, my guest is Nikki Jardine, who's founder of Mirador magazine. Specifically aimed at people living with dementia, it's been available in the US for a while and has recently become available here in the UK.
Well, Nikki, it's great to have you as my guest here on the D Word. Mirador magazine, I mean, you know, to start with, tell us a little bit about the story. I mean, where did Mirador magazine come from?
Oh, thanks so much, Peter, for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here. I really appreciate it. So Mirador actually started back in 2017. And, you know, the thought for it was actually called something different than it was called Evergreen. That was the initial thought. But that got tossed out pretty quickly because there are three other magazines in the area with that name. So I came up with Mirador later. But the concept was really came about because I had been caring for my aunt, who was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's at the age of 62, at young onset. And I became her primary family care partner, and she moved down close to me, and I would see her frequently. She was in long-term care at an apartment residence, and I would spend, you know, several times a week with her in those early days. And one of the things that I noticed straight off was that she stopped reading, and she was always a really big reader. She loved her magazines. She loved her newspapers. And I noticed that they were just sort of stacked up and not really getting leafed through anymore. She would often like to share stories with me. That had stopped happening. And then I noticed one day we were in the dining hall, and she was having trouble reading the menu. Now, I initially, because I didn't, coming into this, I didn't know anything about dementia other than I knew that it existed, but I didn't understand the disease. And as I was learning, I came across a woman named Tipa Snow, who I know is making the way across in the UK and has been over there several times, one of the most amazing dementia care experts out there. And she was arranging for a seminar in my area. So I live in Portland, Oregon. And I went to one of her talks. It was a all-day, eight-hour affair. And I learned a lot about how dementia affects the brain in that conference. And one of the things that I learned was that visual acuity is affected. So, you know, your peripheral vision starts to go, and then your vision becomes, you know, binocular and monocular, and you can have aphasia with certain kinds of dementia. And so it occurred to me during that talk that my aunt wasn't reading because she had dementia. One of the things that was probably affecting her reading was that the things she was trying to read were not formatted specifically for a changing brain. And so I started researching that. And in fact, I came across the Deep Guide created in the UK, fantastic guide about how to create, create images or create pages that are easier to read for people with dementia. And it kind of started to spiral from there. I started looking around for dementia-friendly magazines and newspapers, because that's what she really liked to read. She wasn't really a book reader. I found a couple of books that had been formatted for people with dementia, but it wasn't really something she was interested in. And I was actually really surprised that there weren't magazines created for people living with this sort of brain change. I don't know why I was surprised. I mean, in the States, there's millions of people that have a dementia diagnosis. And so I figured this was a resource that was just a sort of a natural, but there wasn't. And so I actually have a freelance writing background. I was a freelance writer for a number of years. I was a managing editor for a small local magazine. And so it was a pretty natural fit to think, well, maybe if I get some help from some friends, I might be able to create something that my aunt would enjoy. And that sort of was the the beginning of that. And so in early 2018, I had the luck of a dear friend, and I played music with this person also. And she had designed all the graphics for our posters. And I thought, well, I know that Tave can help create the design for this. And then I brought in another graphic designer friend who I'd worked with on a previous magazine. And the three of us got together and spent about a year and a half putting together that first issue.
So it was, you're kind of kindred spirit, I think, because back in 2019, I looked for a radio show about dementia, and Laurie LeBay, who I know you've spoken to a bar, I couldn't find anything either, and so decided to set out on the D word. I mean, but it's quite a big thing, and as I know, you have a really good idea, but turning that good idea into something practical and something in your case physical, a magazine, is that's quite a thing to set out on.
It definitely was daunting. I mean, the print industry isn't necessarily at the top of its game right now. As we know, although there is a resurgence happening with magazines, I feel like, especially in the with the younger generation, they seem to really like them. So that task, at that time, I was caring for my aunt. I was working full time. I was actually a letter carrier for the Postal Service, and so I was pretty busy in doing all of that. And so the thought of like trying to come up with, resources and the time to really put this together was difficult. So we kind of worked on it here and there, and then blammo, COVID hit, and so I lost a couple of my jobs and was stopped playing music, and so had time to really tuck in. And start working on it in earnest and put together some prototype pages. And we took them to where my aunt was living at her residential community. And we took them to some dementia care experts that we knew and sort of started putting together these pages and how to best create that first issue. And so it was a little daunting, but it was definitely a pretty fun project, honestly, to work on, and felt like the right thing. Maybe not necessarily in a business sense, but in a practical sense, to create something without any any rails, really, because nothing really like it existed. As creating a radio show that doesn't have a necessarily that you haven't found an audience for. Where do you start? And I guess, like most things, you start from the beginning and hope for the best.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
We're now looking for guests to join me on the podcast in 2025. If you'd like to get involved, do drop an email to tdwradio@gmail.com or send a message to one of our social media accounts that you can find under the heading Radio TDW. I'm chatting to my guest this week, Nikki Jardine, about Mirador Magazine. What kind of initial reaction did you get to the fact you've got print media? Because as you said, it's making a slight comeback now, which is great. I'm the man who still wants to read a book and doesn't want a Kindle. I'm very much down that road. But I'm sure people must have thought, wait a minute, a physical magazine. I mean, this is kind of not 21st century, as it were.
Exactly. I think a lot of it was that sort of thought, and people had a couple of different reactions. One, they thought it was a good idea, and particularly the format, because most people thought, oh, you're going to do this online. It's like, well, we'll have an online component, but it has to be in print because the audience that I am seeking knows print media. They like leafing through the pages of a magazine, a book, a newspaper. That is a very familiar, comforting. Like, I really miss the daily paper. Like, I grew up with it. I grew up with two or three of them actually arriving at the door. One of the things I really like about the UK and coming to the UK is that you all actually seem to still have a nice, robust, paper, business going. You can see them like on the trains and things like that, which is nice. And that's a pretty much evaporated here. But I think for this particular generation, now my aunt, sort of on that younger end of the boomer generation, but also, so you got your kind of boomers and now your Gen Xers coming up into care. And so I think that this particular kind of media is familiar. And it also just makes it more accessible. If, online media, like you said, you might not want to read a Kindle or might not be able to access it well, or might have tr if you're, having brain change, having trouble figuring out the lighting or the on button or the charging or the whatever, it can become confusing quickly. So my initial thought was a magazine is very lo-fi. It's, you pick it up, you leaf through it, and there's not a lot of bells and whistles there, except for we wanted to make it look really beautiful and really enticing and very engaging, and have the paper, be nice and heavy so it can hold up to multiple use. So that, all these sorts of things sort of went into our design and the idea of it. So the response, so we've been around now for a little over 3 years. We have 13 issues out. We're working on the next set of four. I get lovely response from families, and I've been fortunate to have kudos from people like Lori LeBay and Tipa Snow, who are luckily fans of what we're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, you've got four issues now coming up. Where do you get your ideas from?
That is actually the most fun part of, so all of our magazines are themed, and so we start off our first issue, which just dropped actually in the UK. So we actually just started printing in the UK, thanks to a partnership with Softwood Books in Suffolk. And so we're about ready to send out our second issue, I think on December 1st. But so the ideas come from lots of different places. Sometimes they come from ideas that my co-founder Tave really wants to explore, or I want to explore. I'm a big fan of the sea and the beach and maritime things, so that's come up a couple of times. We've done a whole two issues now on we did a Sand and Sea and Ship and Compass. I also really like space, so we did a space issue. We really like to have a lot of nature in the magazine, so we've done like peaks and clouds and trees and sky, and so we kind of come up with these themes and try to work stories and pieces into the theme. Sometimes we can get a little out there, like we can really like push the envelope on how things kind of come into play. But I think that's what makes it really fun. So sometimes it's like one particular thing we really want to explore, and then it goes from there.
And there's, it's a lovely feel to it. And I always like things with a bit of humor to them. And, if I mention chicken and dumpling to you, tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh. So, okay, here's a couple of things about chicken and dumpling. One, I didn't want to do it initially. And I can tell you that, so the beginning of this particular, so chicken and dumpling started with, so my co-founder, Tave, and I, bandmates, and we travel around and do these shows with our band. And I don't even honestly know how it started, but I started calling myself Dumpling for whatever reason. And so she would call herself Chicken. And we kind of made up these characters, and just to kind of amuse ourselves on these road trips about the kind of shenanigans they would get involved with. And it was always kind of chaos and ridiculous. And, they were like fun-loving characters that always sort of wound up on the wrong end of things, but, always with love and gratitude for being right where they are. And so, when we were putting together the initial idea of the magazine, we did want to have some sort of photo spread that wasn't necessarily just words. We wanted pictures so that people that were still, maybe they were more advanced in their condition. Just something for them to look at that was pleasant and fun and that they could engage in. The initial chicken and dumplings started off as a photo comic of my cats and trying to figure out like how to make the cats sort of have thought bubbles and things like that. And Tave was like, we should actually use people. We should use people. And we took, these ideas to one of my friends, Judy Lara, who had been working in dementia care for about 20 years. And she said, you absolutely have to have people. People like to see smiling faces. They love to see animals as well, but the smiling faces are really nice. So Tavi and I have all of these photographs, like way more than you would think that we would have, of the two of us just messing about on road trips or doing in between shows or whatever. And so we had all of these pictures that already, and so we grabbed a few sets of those and started putting them together into these photo comics. And our friend Judy Laura said, yes, that's it. You need to keep these characters going. And I was like, really? Like, who is going to want to see us? Like, these women just kind of going crazy. But it turns out that The Adventures of Chicken and Dumpling is probably one of the more popular things in the magazine. People really like it. The humor is, some there's some really, I think there's some very, very funny ones. There's some very silly ones. Sometimes they don't necessarily make sense, but that's not really the point of them. But they're really a lot of fun to put together. And yeah, so that's the story.
And I think, it's important to have that variety, isn't it? You were saying about words, pictures, a cartoon, and you've got things like word searches and spot the differences, and it's a whole variety of things within each issue.
It's really important. Like I, you know, that came, part of that was there was some, the kinds of magazines that my aunt really liked to read were very, varied. She was a very curious person. She liked nature. She liked science. She liked entertainment. She liked doing puzzles. She was a well-rounded, human, and her dementia diagnosis did not change that at all. She loved learning. She loved being able to share what she learned with other people. She had an incredibly fantastic sense of humor. She was really, really funny. And so the magazines that she liked sort of reflected that. She liked, history and nature. So she'd read National Geographic and the Smithsonian and The Week to catch up on the week's news. And she liked her Oprah magazine, to keep up with, those sorts of things. So when we're putting together these sorts of ideas for the pages, we wanted to have a variety of things for people to read, to interact with. We loved having activities in there because that was something people could do possibly independently, or do it with a partner or with their grandchild. Or so we wanted to keep things, each page an activity in itself, but also something that, that you could have a variety of things to do with.
And in doing that, I mean, you do bring a sense of independence to people as well. A lot of my friends who live with dementia say that, one of the things that unfortunately happens, you have things done to you. You're not the one that initiate things. When, if you've got a copy of Mirador magazine, first of all, it's sent to you, so it's your magazine. You've got something of your own, and it can start a conversation with, hey, have you seen this? And suddenly puts the person living with dementia in the front seat.
You absolutely got it right there. That is really one of the primary reasons why we designed this the way that we did, is because you do see people that things just start to fall away. You get things taken away from you. You lose the ability to take yourself to the supermarket. You lose the ability to drive. Sometimes you lose the ability to even choose what you're eating that day. You kind of get ferried around a little bit, especially as you get deeper into the disease. And that is really hard for people. We all like to be our, we're adults, we're grown-ups, we're independent. We want to be able to maintain that as long as we possibly can. And so, the reason why Mirador is designed the way it is because we did want people to have that access so that they could read the stories and share with their loved ones or their friends. They could do the puzzles. They could have something to sit and read in the morning or in the evening or in the, the afternoon, whenever. It is theirs. That's not going to get taken from them. Another reason why it's a physical copy of the book. It's theirs, it's something for them. And, there's not that many people that are doing this sort of work. I have a couple of colleagues. My friend Luke Gilligan does the Recense Register, which is a broadsheet newspaper. And my other dear friend Lorette Clear creates Nana's Books, and she's got about 40 of these books. And all of us sort of kind of talk about this sense of wanting to have something of your own, particularly for readers, because I think that, if you are a reader or a longtime learner, you are always going to be a reader and a longtime learner. To suddenly have those opportunities removed, not because you can't do it, but simply because you can't access it, is really a shame. And easily, that is an easy fix. Creating a page that has a 14 point typeface instead of an 8 point typeface, that is not a, it's not a large bridge to travel, So having something of your own that and as a reader, you don't tend to just have one kind of book or one type of magazine. You like a variety. You like to learn lots of different things. So and to be able to share those things with others. It's a really important aspect, I think, of our lives and of people that are experiencing living with dementia, that they do have the opportunity to remain in community, remain in charge and in control of their own lives for as long as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I have friends that say to me, don't concentrate on what I can't do anymore, concentrate on what I can do. And also, there seems to be this perception of society in general that, hey, well, you've had a dementia diagnosis, so you won't want to read a magazine. And I think, what you're doing is opening the door for people to think, oh, wait a minute, yeah, this would be a good idea. And the other thing I like about it, you appertained to a little bit earlier in the discussion, is the intergenerational thing, because we're not just talking about someone living with dementia; we're talking about the whole family here who can get themselves involved.
I mean, that's right. One of the things that we do know about dementia, and we're learning new things, of course, all the time, but that it does affect the entire family. And sometimes you might have a younger person, or even a teen or a young adult, even, or even just anybody, to be perfectly honest. When my aunt was diagnosed, there were certain members of the family that weren't quite sure how to approach her. They weren't quite sure what to do. And still, Rebecca. She just, her brain was changing. And so the way that you spoke with her or things that she retained was different, but she was still Rebecca. When you have something physical that you can bring in, whether it's a book of photographs or a book or a magazine or something that you can share with, it can make that transition from, I don't know how to speak to her because she's different, to, oh, I'm going to bring something in to share, and vice versa. If Rebecca had something in her room that she could share with me, that makes that visit all the more meaningful because there's an actual connection happening there and can kind of help remove that bit of awkwardness that can happen. And that can happen very quickly. All of a sudden you're engaged in something and then there you are. You're back to being aunt and niece again, or siblings, or what have you. We're learning more and more about dementia, but there's still a tremendous, as because we do this program, so much stigma around the disease, and especially, as you mentioned, what people can and can't do. And there's this immediate thought of you just need to kind of take everything away because they can't do it anymore. I hear that quite a bit. Why would you create something like this? People with dementia can't read. Well, we know that's absolutely not true. It might be true in some cases, and it might be true as the disease progresses, but We know that people even in mid to late stage can still read the words. That is a skill that does not go away, except in some cases, of course, if you have severe aphasia due to certain kinds of dementia. Retention, of course, might be the biggest issue with reading. You might not retain what you read from one page to the next, but as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't really matter. Are you enjoying that page as it exists? Are you enjoying reading that story as it exists? That piece of poetry, looking at that image, sharing your thoughts about what you're seeing or reading in that moment, whether it's 3 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour, it doesn't really matter. That bit of enjoyment and engagement is solid. Like it's there, and it doesn't need to be, that it doesn't need to be looked over or kind of put aside because, oh, it's only 3 minutes or it's only 5 minutes. No. Like, let's have as many of those moments as we can possibly string together.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Here on UK Health Radio, we have nearly 50 original weekly shows covering all aspects of health. All the shows are available to listen again and download from the website www.ukhealthradio.com, and they're also all available in podcast form. My guest this week is Nikki Jardine from Mirador Magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one thing you've done, I know, is that you have people living with dementia who contribute to the magazine, which is great.
We do. We have had folks. One of my favorite writers is a woman named Judy Stock, and she lives down in the LA area. And she contributed some really lovely pieces for us, some essays. And we're always, just to put this out there, always on the lookout for people with lived experience to contribute essays or poetry to our magazine. It's a big part of what we enjoy doing. And in fact, we had your own Peter Berry and Deb Bunt contribute to the magazine. They wrote a piece for us back in Volume 8, which will be hitting your all's shores sometime probably next year. But that is a really important part. Again, is trying to reduce that stigma that people with lived experience of dementia lose all their faculties and abilities. There are lifelong skills that we retain even with a dementia diagnosis. Peter actually is a great example of that. And I know many, many people with lived experience that contribute greatly in all sorts of ways, whether they're playwrights, musicians, poets, writers. There's lots of different aspects to people's journeys that can still be explored, experienced, and encouraged.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, probably should have asked you this at the beginning, actually, but where did Mirador come from as a name?
Oh, the name. So I am a big fan of lighthouses. And I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, so I love the seashore and I love the ocean. And there's something about lighthouses that have always sort of seemed quite romantic to me, and I visit them when I can. And so when I we tossed the name Evergreen because we're going to do that, we're trying to come up with something different. Lighthouse wasn't an option for us. And so I have my aunt Sharon. Was a bilingual speaker. She loved learning about our Spanish genealogy, and she had raised her children to speak Spanish, and she was a big fan of teaching bilingual lingually during her she was a social worker, and so she worked in that aspect as a bilingual speaker. And so I was wondering what the Spanish word for lighthouse was, and it turns out to be Mirador, which is it roughly translates to a beacon, a vista, a view, something overlooking, shining. And so I really liked that. I liked the name, but I also liked the connotation of it in that the magazine itself can be seen as something that's a safe homecoming. It's something that you can, find something that you can light on that increases your curiosity or something that you're into. But it's also just a place of welcoming because it is a accessible, adaptive text publication with something that is created for you, and something that you can enjoy. So that's sort of that's the connotation of that one.
Yeah, it's a great name, great name. Time's drawing us a little bit of a close. I mean, if somebody wants Mirador, where can they get it?
So in the UK, you can actually we have a its own separate website, which is miradoruk.com, and that will take you to our website there. If you want to check out, we do have our obviously our US website, miradormagazine.com. The reason I'm so excited about the Mirador UK and being able to publish in the UK is that, as you can imagine, it's very expensive to send magazines overseas. We have had readers, and we do have readers that reach out, but it's expensive to send magazines abroad. So I'm very excited that we are now publishing and distributing, in Suffolk, to the entire UK. So I'm really excited about that. So yeah, miradoruk.com. And then you can always just reach out if you have any questions. You can reach me at Nikki, Nikki, at miradormagazine.com. And that is, and I love talking with folks. We are a very grassroots publication. It is literally just me and Tave and Ty making this thing happen with a couple of contributors. So if you email me, you'll get me. And I'm always happy to chat with people and answer questions.
Thank you so much. Wish you every success with Mirador. I think it's a brilliant initiative. And thanks so much for being my guest on the D Word.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Many thanks to Nikki, and I wish her continued success with Mirador magazine, which is such a great idea. If you'd like to get a copy, then all the details are on the website at www.miradormagazine.com. And if you're in the UK, there's now a special UK site at miradoruk.com. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company. Hope you enjoyed it. And you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.